Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Pinder scored with a first shuttle. Pinder scored with a second! And Ireland are in the Hockey World Cup final! The second lowest ranked side in the competition! Rip up the fourth book once more! And we'll play in the final match tomorrow afternoon!
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Hello and a very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, Ken is taking a break this morning after the news of Ronaldo going back to United. He couldn't handle it, so we're giving him the morning off and we'll be kicking off this morning with something a little bit different. I'm delighted to be saying that I will be joined by the Irish team manager of the Paralympics, Nasser Russell, live all the way from Tokyo. Very shortly. In racing, we'll be chatting to George McDonough, racing pundit and Over the Line show co-host, and he previews this weekend's racing and sharing with us his lucky 15. And in GAA, we're delighted to chat to Paddy Hunter, who's a sports journalist with the Ulster Herald, ahead of today's highly anticipated semi-final between Kerry and Tyrone, which will be at 3:30 today. In football, Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call will be chatting about the League of Ireland action, the disappointment during the week from the Europa Conference League, as well as the Premier League. And we'll also see what he has to say about Man United's incredible signing for €28 million of Cristiano Ronaldo. We're going to be joined on the line by the co-founder of HerSport.ie, Niamh Tallon. And she's going to explain to us what to look out for as the kids are returning to school, specifically around supporting girls in sport. And of course, the NFL season is only less than 2 weeks away. It's starting on the 9th of September. And we're going to have Stephen O'Brien back from the UK Packers and the Irish Packers, of course, we'll put that in there too, for a very special pre-season chat, and he'll be telling us everything to look out for in the NFL news. Golf, of course, Deirdre Smith will be back talking about the wonderful achievement of Leona Maguire getting to the Solheim Cup team, and we'll look at Europe's chances in that, as well as Rory McIlroy's performances in the playoffs. As usual, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. And of course, don't forget, we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport 1068, and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Now, as I said, something a little different this morning, and I'm delighted that we're going live to Tokyo. Ireland have qualified 29 athletes for the Paralympic Games in 27 slots, representing Team Ireland in 9 different sports. And I'm delighted to be joined by the chef de mission, Nasser Russell. Good morning, Nasser, from here, but good afternoon, of course, over there for you.
Indeed. Hi, Reggie. Yes, it's almost dinner time here.
Yeah, so, I know. It's amazing.
Good morning,
great
good evening.
Great to be chatting to you over there and getting the inside track directly from there. And it's been, while most people were sleeping here, it's been a great night overnight as well. For us, as I said, Katie George Dunleavy and Eve McChrystal claimed silver in the B3000 meters individual pursuit in the velodrome.
That's right. Yeah, I know, it's been super. Actually, really a powerful performance from them. Actually, so it's good. It's amazing. They broke a world record and then had someone break it a few minutes after them. But yeah, they did super. Really super. Great performance and really good intent. Which I think is kind of the characteristic, I think, of this team at the moment, without a doubt. So that's great.
So how are you finding it over there? I mean, obviously we saw it with the Olympics and now with you guys following after all of the restrictions. Has there still been a good atmosphere over there? Has it been an enjoyable experience so far?
Yeah, you know, believe it or not, it has. It's been certainly the experience of a lifetime. It was a career high, without a doubt, for a lot of us. I suppose in one sense, it's been stripped down just back to the sport. And I think if you enjoy sport, you'll really enjoy the ingenuity of and the innovation and the adaptability of all the athletes and the staff here, without a doubt. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, we're in a bubble. It's weird. I'm just in the aquatic centre now. We've got Nicole Turner on in a few minutes. And you can just see like thousands of empty seats. But interesting, despite that, actually, I think, and indeed probably because of it, you know, all the teams across the board, you know, really trying to support each other and create a good environment for it. But, you know, it's needed, really. I suppose a lot of it is about keeping ourselves safe and healthy. We're kind of living in this little bubble world at the moment. But it's not, and I guess that was a lot of the preparation we were doing, was trying to ensure that, albeit we have to do daily saliva samples, we have to wear masks pretty much 24/7. Yeah. There's hand sanitizers in and out. We have to wear gloves before we take the tray to have our dinner. All those kind of things. But actually, you know, they just become part and parcel of what we do every day. So, you know, we know why we're doing it, and it's keeping us safe. And, you know, at the end of the day, we can perform sport, and we're very grateful for that.
And, you know, there's 29 athletes in the team. Are they allowed mingler and with each other? Can they create friendships that way, or is it still segregated because of the sports?
We're trying to keep in our bubble to a certain extent. I mean, we're all kind of in the same apartment block, but we're all wearing our FFP2 masks inside, indoors, doing the hand sanitizer. A lot of the practice that we were trying to build up at home, and also through the holding camp. People are really respectful. I think that's probably the main vibe, but we all kind of, at the end of the day, want to make sure that we can get in here without COVID, compete without COVID, and get home without it again. Mm. And indeed, across the board, even in the main dining hall, I mean, where it's absolutely wonderful to see so many people from, like, there's 196. And indeed, across the board, even in the main dining hall, I mean, where it's absolutely wonderful to see so many people from, like, there's 196 different countries here. It's fantastic, the range of colour and vibrancy. People love being here, albeit we're in a bubble, albeit we appreciate it's different. But, and again, people are generally being really respectful of the guidance. It's a bit bold. I mean, the irony is, as a team, we've not actually been able to be together. So I think we're in the 4 days when actually all the team are in Japan. We have our cyclist. So, we had to watch the cycling on the telly, not even to yourselves, because Izu is like 2.5 hours from here. And again, we'd be breaking the bubble if we went there to them. And again, we're in a bubble here in the village. And then, you know, the sports are working with each other, and we are kind of mingling in ourselves. But again, being really respectful about what the rules are, and trying not to, you know, not being in close contact. But, it seems things are holding. There's very, very few cases. I think 1 to 2 out of several thousand people that are in the village. So, you know, we just need to keep up the daily practice and behaviours. And again, there's huge leadership from the people within the team on that one. So, it's an easy job, I have to say, minding that. But there's good motivation for why we need to do what we need to do.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a lot more difficult than you're giving a credit for, to be fair. You mentioned Nicole Turner there, the 100-meter breaststroke, of course. Has that gotten underway?
You'll have to tell me the results of that, because I'm in a different room. It'd be too loud if I was in the arena. But I think, you know, she's doing pretty well. I think her favourite event actually is on Monday. Mm-hmm. So, but again, you know, they're just cracking out PBs here, which is great. So we credit to the athletes themselves, obviously, and across the board, really, I suppose, the preparation the teams have done, the professionalism of the staff, and the support we have of practitioners with all the Sport Institute and Sport Ireland and so on and so forth. So, yeah, it's good vibes.
And another finalist today as well, of course, is Greta. It's Stremakite, is it? In the
Stremakite, you did a good job.
In the 1500 meters.
I just had to ask her. exactly. Yeah, so we're at the aquatics now for Nicole, and then we'll hop into our cars and try and peg across Tokyo to get to the national stadium, and then cheer on Greta on that one. Yeah, I think that'd be a great race, actually. I was there for the heats last night, and it's just such a phenomenal standard, really. It's amazing that the whole Paralympic Games have moved on, but the track, all the events actually are really, really, really competitive. So I think Greta will have a great race. So if you're going to win a medal, you may as well have it the race of your life. So I think that's what. And she is such a brilliant temperament. We're looking forward to seeing how she runs.
Excellent stuff. Of course, have to mention, I wanted to get into it first a little bit, but Ellen Keane and the gold medal. We saw the you know, the joy there was here with Kelly and the gold medal, and this is going to be on a par with that. Life-changing for Ellen, I presume, in many ways, but a story that's been going on for quite some time, and she's well-known in Irish sporting circles already, but the absolute pinnacle, getting that gold medal, and what a performance.
Oh, it was cracking, wasn't it? It was, you could just see her dig deep. It's amazing. I love that you see, just almost regardless of what the sport is, you can see when the athlete really wants it and how they go about then trying to do that. Yeah, it was great. And actually, Sophie Pascoe, who came second, had actually was one of the top Paralympians ever, and actually had a a change in her impairment, which actually brought her into the same class as Ellen. But again, just shows the calibre of Ellen, the support she had from the team behind her, that again, she was able to kind of readjust to that and just get down to business, focus on herself, and did a superb race. It was so cool. We were very excited.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the Kiwi was, it was only 0.26 of a second between Ellen and Sophie, wasn't it? And
that's right.
It was a real threat, as you said, recategorized before the event, and kind of a bit of, I suppose, kind of a little bit of the unknown or a bit of a dark horse when you're kind of building up towards something and then you've got that thrown at you.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, it's interesting, again, and I suppose it's no different across the sport, across the board, really, at the moment. It's the same thing. There just hasn't been the same level of international competition. You know, most of our guys got maybe one or two races if they were lucky in Europe this year. But again, I suppose being here and you've got people from coming from all around the world. So the form guide has kind of gone out the window a little bit. So it'll very much, again, really interesting in terms of sporting process and preparation around having to really focus on your own goals and your own kind of processes. And, you know, I think it's really interesting the amount of PBs that we've here, because again, you know, there's just been so focused on trying to progress and a really strong focus on the processes to put in place to achieve those aims and those goals and those medals. So yeah, it's good.
How much of a lift does it give to the rest of the athletes when they see Ellen, you know, coming back with that medal, and indeed Katie, George and Eve coming back as well, now adding to that? Because I saw the great footage of everybody clapping Ellen back into the village. Does it kind of give everybody a little bit of a lift of, you know what, maybe I can just do it, and with all the PBs that are coming out, maybe there's a chance or a little bit more belief that they can actually get on the podium?
Yeah, I think bang on. I suppose, was, you know, yourself as well, when you start to get a few tries in and things, it just kind of solidifies is the wrong word, but it kind of concentrates and makes the kind of why we're here more intense. And also, you know, it just gives it, at this stage, people have done the work, and actually now it's about celebrating and using the work they've done to perform. And I think actually just gives people that little bit more confidence to do that and go, yeah, goodness. And particularly, again, those who will have worked with her or knows her and, again, trained with her in and out of the National Sports Campus, you know, every day she's in doing the training. There's no magic behind it. It's that diligence and concentration. And again, you know, people can map that back to the work that they've done. And I think just, you know, if there's any doubts, actually, it probably starts to evaporate some of those doubts. And what you've got, people, again, is much more focused on the sense that, yes, we can. And I've done the work, and now it's time to perform. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's palpable. And even just kind of casual chats with the athletes as we're coming and going and up and down lifts. And, you know, they've taken it to heart, and they feel really motivated now as well. So it's got a really interested to see how the next few days unfold.
I read a really interesting interview with Brendan O'Brien had with Ellen, you know, in the Irish Examiner, and talking about the fact that she has really noticed a change in attitude. So, for example, in Rio in 2016, the Olympians got goodie bags and phones and various different things, and there was none of that for the Paralympians. But in Tokyo, there's very much an equal respect for both sets of athletes, and they're getting the exact same stuff as the Olympians got. On the water bottle, for example, there's both logos. Everywhere you look, there's both logos. Is there a sense that Paralympics has really sort of moved on to the next level?
Yeah, I think that's pretty true, actually. Yeah, it is. And actually, the athletes here themselves have noted that, and it makes them feel, you know, much more empowered and I suppose enabled, and it gives much more credit to their effort and their work. You know, they are high performance athletes. You know, they train day in, day out. This is their job, I guess. You know, the difference is they're in classifications where they're people of similar speed and where they can be competitive. But yeah, it's great. I mean, yeah, everyone's rocking around getting up their Samsung phones and their Airbnb vouchers and whatever they're entitled. The staff, mind you, not. No, it's good. And also, actually, you know, credit to the IPC. Again, you know, they've just started a campaign and a movement around We the 15, around 50% of the world's population having impairment. And, you know, it's about raising awareness. And that's, you know, that's at the core of the Paralympic movement in general. And Ellen is such a great ambassador for that, you know, and really proud. And it's interesting, as with a lot of these athletes, either have acquired their impairments or are born with it. And, you know, they are, you know, going through their journey using sport, you know, to perform and say what they want to say. So it's really encouraging. And I think I'm really glad that, the both elements are, you know, both the Olympics and Paralympics are given the credibility that both of them deserve, and the Paralympics Games, you know, carving out that niche for itself and you know, getting across what they want to say and you know, normalizing people with impairments and you know, it's you walk around here and it's just like, these are high performance athletes. It's tough competition, and like and I would say there's another level of it, which is around, you know, the ingenuity around how you go about doing something if you only have one arm, or you know, you're in a wheelchair and you have to think creatively about how you do something else. So, you know, across the board, it's really innovative, and both the staff that work with the athletes and the athletes themselves, and it's a very ability focused and a strengths based focused approach to coaching and sport, I think
it's incredible. I know my son is glued to the Paralympics, absolutely loves them. And he was, you know, it struck me that the stigma has been taken away from whatever there might have been in the past. I suppose, you know, for people, it's almost as if you, when you were watching Paralympics before, you were kind of feeling, you were watching it in awe, but also with a degree maybe of, you know, sympathy, or I don't know the right way, the right word. And it feels like it's almost condescending, that because these athletes are so high performance that you have to see through all of those disabilities or inabilities or whatever way you want to describe it, and see the actual sport for what it is. And I think, you know, certainly kids are able to see that much better maybe than older adults are. And now everybody's starting to see it that way.
Yeah, do you know, I think it's really honest reflection, and the same, you know, and again, it's only when you get close to it and you start going, Jesus, how are they doing that?
Yeah.
And that's bloody amazing, pardon my French. Yeah. But again, and the same, the normalizing, I mean, I just think of my own daughter, like, before I came out, she'd just drawn this beautiful wheelchair and an athlete in a wheelchair because I was going to do it, and it was just completely normal to her to do that. And I would just think, when I was four, I don't even know I'd known that, you know? Exactly. So again, it's changing the perception within society, you know, certainly in Ireland and then globally as well, about, you know, abilities, and also, you know, reflecting around how we create spaces that are more user-friendly for people with impairments, or, you know, just across the board for, you know, people who aren't able-bodied, or, you know, people from different backgrounds and so on and so forth as well. So yeah, there's a stronger message there. And again, it's really powerful. And also, you know, I think the coverage that's happening now, being able to have a conversation with you around this, for example, and then, you know, what's on television as well is a huge part of it. And, you know, credit to the media for being able to showcase it, and for, I guess, understanding it and getting it as well, and being able to put that out. So that's really important.
It's easy to showcase some of the achievements that are being done.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the image for me of the Paralympics will be the table tennis player who I saw during the week with no arms, using his head and mouth to hold the bat and playing at a level that I could only ever dream of. It was absolutely incredible to see it. What about the rest of our medal hopefuls then? Of course, obviously, as you said, Greta is coming up at 11:10, but there's still plenty to come, isn't there? So
I know, there's bumper to go. We've got Brittany Arenzi, actually, is one of our flag bearers, is and actually Jordan Lee, both of them are out competing tomorrow, Brittany in powerlifting, and so she's going well from all accounts to her coach, so we'll see how that is. And then I'm going through the competition schedule in my head here now. We've got Jason, obviously, who's competing tomorrow as well, actually, and finals tomorrow evening, so that tomorrow will be a good day. And then we've got all the cyclists back out on the road, so Katie George and Eve will be back on the road, and Martin and Eamon as well, and Ronan and Rochelle. So again, we should see some good performances there. We've got Michael McKillop as well towards the end of the week. And then we have our Patrick O'Leary again in canoeing. And Philly Gisham in shooting. So again, you know, with the athletics guys, there's certainly a good bit of form and kind of seasoned campaigners there. So it'd be really good to see how they come out. And they, you know, they've had good seasons. I think what was really good is, again, you know, be interesting to reflect on the lockdown and the time it has given people, I suppose, to A, reflect themselves, and B, probably have a bit more kind of winter training behind them, if you like, rather than a lot more competition. So again, it'd be just interesting to see how that comes out to play. But some good seasoned campaigners to come through. And then also, I think I'm hoping there'll be a few surprises from some of the other sports as well. But yeah, everyone's in really good form. form, actually, in a good place. So we'll take that.
Absolutely. Well, it's been a huge success so far. Congratulations on everything you've achieved to date. It really has been incredible. We're really looking forward to watching the rest of it too. And thank you so much for taking the time, NASA, to talk to us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I know you're very busy there. But and I have to give a shout out, of course, to my cousin Jordan Lee, who's taking place tomorrow in the high jump. He's only young, he's only 20. Yeah. He reckons himself maybe 2024 and 2028 will be his real time. But, you know, I don't care. I'll be shouting like crazy in the morning.
I think so. Well, and you know what? Like half the team are debutants, so it's amazing the learning and amazing watching them perform and the sense that they get from now being a Paralympian and how they want to use that for going forward. So, you know, I'm really a great ambition and really motivating to keep working and supporting them.
Wonderful. Okay, NASA, I'll let you get back to it. You can see how Nicole got on. Hopefully that went well.
Yeah.
And we will chat to you again and good luck with everything and stay safe.
Not at all. My pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Thanks a lot. That's NASA Russell there, who is the chef de mission for the Irish Paralympic team over there in Tokyo, doing a wonderful job. And as she said, people getting personal bests left, right and centre and medals galore. And for those of you who didn't hear it yet, Katie George Dunleavy and Eve McChrystal claimed silver in the B 3000 metre individual pursuit in the velodrome earlier this morning. So another silver medal there for Ireland. Wonderful thing. Getting a world record in the process and having it beaten a few minutes later. But there you go. They were world record holders for a brief period of time. Okay, we're going to take a break now. Don't go away. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. You can text us on 087 1155 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. We're here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all your sporting news. Now, in less than 2 weeks, the NFL takes place again, start of the season, and it's always a sign of the end of the summer, but that's the way it goes. Last season ended with Tom Brady and the Bucs winning a Super Bowl against what was probably expected by many to be against all odds for Tom Brady, but he did it again. I'm delighted to be joined, as always, by our expert on the NFL, Stephen O'Brien from the UK and Irish Packers. Good morning, Stephen. How are you? Welcome back.
Thanks very much, Reggie. Just like Tom Brady, you can't get rid of me. You know what I mean? I just keep hanging about what's going on.
Yeah, well, that's it. Well, you're doing as good a job as him anyway. I don't mind telling you. yeah, it was an interesting end to the season. I suppose we debated at the time. We were wondering, could that golden arm of his keep up? And there was no missing, and he got the job done. So it was a good finish for them. But what are we looking at this year, Ian? Give me all the latest and all the happenings.
All the latest and greatest. Yeah, it's annoying, really, for all analysts and fans and everything, because Tom Brady keeps doing what you're supposed to not be allowed to do in the NFL. Of course, they have the structure where the best college players go to the worst teams, and it's supposed to add sort of parity. You know, everyone's supposed to get along and a new team gets in. And we see that happening, Reg, don't we? Like, every year I'm on, you know, there's new teams getting into the playoffs. But then Tom Brady, old man Brady, comes in, the walking stick in hand, and decides to win the Super Bowl again. Mm. So it really sort of knocks that narrative on the head. But look, it's a great league. There's loads of exciting stuff happening. And, you know, that's a fantastic storyline for me. I'm not a Brady hater as much as it's funny to gag on. But yeah, it's you know, loads of stuff happened. Like Drew Brees, future Hall of Famer, he's retired now. So all eyes are on the Saints to see, you know, what can they do in the meantime. If you look at the sort of the betting odds as to who's going to win the Super Bowl already, which is kind of ridiculous because it's my week one act is usually an absolute train wreck. We all know this now, because it's hard to predict. So it's amazing that they have like Super Bowl odds for who's going to win the Super Bowl. But you can see that the Saints have dropped down, you know, once they had a player like Drew Brees, great, now that he's gone, you know, who knows what's going to happen. Of course, we had the Aaron Rodgers, unfortunately, drama throughout the offseason as well. So that's kind of a new change. But look, as much as sort of we're like all excited about the headlines and stuff, it's amazing to see the amount of fans sort of like go into hibernation almost, and then they come back out again when these plans start to ramp up. We've been going, all right, it's time for NFL again. When really behind it all, the players are still working away, doing their off-season workouts, doing their OTAs, mini camps. They've got a new batch of rookies in there as well. It's really physically demanding. It makes me think, Reg, what would have happened, right, if Instagram and Twitter were around when you were in your heyday for Ireland? Would we have seen many workout videos? Would you have been doing promos for Nutribullet, you know, off-season stuff? I mean, what would the timeline be for Reggie Kerrigan here?
There'd be no Nutribullets, I can tell you that. But, I'm quite happy there was none of that stuff around in my day.
Yeah, yeah. True, too. But it just got to show, like, I mean, camps for the, you know, the Jacksonville Jags, but they have a new college coach, Urban Meyer. He's, like, ridiculously famous, ridiculously one of the most winningest coach in college history. He has a quarterback as well, which he isn't used to losing, Trevor Lawrence. You know, he's a long-haired fella like myself now, and he's done the business in college, so he's coming in. You know, so seeing sort of camps change even within the structure. So apparently the players are getting really annoyed at Urban Meyer because he has a guy going around the camp, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Reggie, with a boom mic. So he's telling people, you know, stay hydrated, do whatever. But imagine your coach being able to hear absolutely everything that you're saying during training. I doubt that would go down well with professional rugby players like yourself. It's kind of like, you know, you kind of want to vent sometimes against the coach. You don't really want them hearing everything in practice. But yeah, look, it's going to be another cracking season, as always, with the NFL. There's always so much changing with the roster and stuff like that, which you're doing at the minute. They're cutting down the rosters now because we're in preseason. So, as you say, it's the top of the show. I mean, we're only, 2 weeks away from the regular season, and yeah, God knows what's going to happen.
And who's shaping up good at this stage? Who's looking well and likely to succeed?
Well, when we look at the odds, I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs are back in it again, Reg. You know, we see Patrick Mahomes. You know, again, another thing that sort of makes the NFL very fair is that we can't do the likes of the United and City and Chelsea stuff where they just splash the cash and get all of the best players. You know, they can only pay them so much because they have the salary cap. Kansas City somehow have managed, particularly because they had Patrick Mahomes for a while on a sort of a really low-paid contract because he was a rookie coming in. He was on his first contract, and they since, like, bumped it up. He's a billion-dollar man now. But, you know, they have a roster that's absolutely stacked. The Tampa Bay Bucs are second in line to win the Super Bowl. We've got the Buffalo Bills, who were flying high last year. They're coming into it. But I have to give an honourable mention to the Packers, if I may. And I know it might seem sort of biased, but look, here's a team who Aaron Rodgers wins the MVP last season. Everyone's sort of saying, oh, they don't have any wide receivers. They've got no offensive weapons. You know, Aaron Rodgers is always being, you know, sort of, he hasn't been given the weapons, which I always came up against and said that's complete nonsense. They're the number one scoring offense last year, Rich. So, and also the players within the Packers camp, one being Preston Smith, took a massive, like, we're talking millions of dollars here, a massive pay cut to stay with the team. And why are they doing it? It's because they got to the NFC Championship game last year against the Bucs. They got to the NFC Championship game the year before that and lost that as well. So they've lost two semi-finals, basically, on the trot. So this team absolutely believe they can make the Super Bowl. But this could be Aaron Rodgers last year and an awful lot of other players last year. Devontae Adams, who's on the top 10 NFL players. He's seen as the best wide receiver in the league. I mean, you know, he hasn't signed a new contract, Reg. It sounds like, and it looks like outside camp, is that he's potentially holding out to see, you know, could he get top money, which he deserves? And also, will Aaron Rodgers even stick around? So this seems like, and I don't know if anyone's seen it, you know, The Last Dance, you know, documentary about basketball, the Chicago Bulls. Is this the last time? Because they've basically brought the band back together, Reg. They've paid players. They've got players back in one-year deals. So bring them back to try get to the Super Bowl this year. Matt LaFleur has done a great job since he's come on as head coach. And I know I'm from Ask UK Packers, and I do the podcast, and I'm very invested and very biased. But I would say the Green Bay Packers are definitely a team to watch because one of two things are going to happen, and this is the last thing I'll say. If number one, they're the real deal, which I think they are, and they'll go very far. Or if the wheels start to come off the wagon for any reason, this is a team that was so steeped in belief that they're going to win the Super Bowl. If stuff starts to go wrong, Reg, I have no idea how they're going to be able to handle that. And that's going to be a fascinating thing to watch.
Is the Aaron Rodgers thing not a big distraction for the rest of the squad and team, though? Like, you know, wondering what way he'll... Will he blow up, basically?
Yeah, I mean, it was in the off-season more so, right? Because he actually did, like, look, he's no leverage, right? Because the Packers haven't signed to a big contract. They can more so break that next year. But this year, they were never going to trade him. And so he could have said to them, I want to be traded, which allegedly, you know, if you're believed in the media, because he never said any of this, remember. It was a massive distraction then, because you're trying to bring players to Green Bay or trying to get them to re-sign, and they're looking at the quarterback who's gone AWOL. He didn't show up for OTAs. They didn't know if he was going to show up for training camp. He literally just decided he was 2 days beforehand. So it's very hard to bring people to Green Bay because, Reg, I love the team and I've been there before COVID, like every year for 5 years watching the game. It's an unbelievable place. However, from a pro athlete standpoint and from a brand standpoint, there's not a lot going on in Green Bay. If you're in New York, or, you know, you're a darling of New York, the media go crazy. Whereas Green Bay is sort of a sleepy, you know, Midwestern town, and not a lot happens. So you need a player like Aaron Rodgers to bring players to camp. Now, will he be a distraction this season? No, because he said he's all in, and he has to put stuff on, not that he needs it, but he's going to want to put another MVP season, or damn close to it, on tape. Because if he's going to try pick his way out of Green Bay onto a team I think he's going to want to show that he's a team player. He's all in. He's still operating at the absolute highest level. And then that means that Green Bay get a king's ransom for trading him. And then he gets a, you know, a big contract and his dream team, which is allegedly in the California area because he's from California. And he's getting older now, Red, you know, where it'd be understandable that he wants to kind of retire. Like every retiree goes to a sunny place. You know, same, Costa del Sol, Florida. I mean, it usually happens. So I don't think it's going to be a distraction for the team because I think he's going to play his heart out. But I think certainly after this year, that could be the end of incredible quarterback play for the Packers. And I don't mean that in any disrespect to Jordan Love, who's the he's not a rookie now. He's in his second year coming in behind Aaron Rodgers. But Reg, you and I know there's only one player like Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi or Aaron Rodgers. These players are first ballot Hall of Fame style players in their business. So you're not going to replace him with someone as good as him. It's going to be a step down, but how much of a step down is anybody's guess.
Yeah, well, he had a career high 48 touchdown passes last season, putting him the best passer rating. And, you know, you can't argue with that. MVP for the third time. How has it been affected over there? I hate talking about COVID. You know, we know it's over, but we have to talk about it in the sense that are the crowds back? Are the bubbles gone? Because it's still pretty rampant over there, COVID, especially with the Delta variant. So what are the what's the chat around that type of thing in terms of attendance?
Full stadiums, would you believe? Yeah. So they're saying full stadiums. Now, there are protocols to, like, you can be fully vaccinated, just get PCR tests and stuff. Now, we've organised a group trip to go over, which is actually flying out of London, so I go from here to London and over. It's been sold out, so we sold the 45 tickets and then some where people kind of join in the tour. On the back of that, our game is in November, but there's still a travel ban between the UK and the USA. So in that regard, Red is kind of up in the air. But for American crowds, it's a full stadium and you can get in. Now, there's massive ructions happening, and as everything sort of, you know, with America becomes sort of bipartisan, and there's Democratic versus Republican, vaccinated versus unvaccinated. And I understand all of the viewpoints, but the way the NFL are looking at it is that if you're not double vaccinated, well, then you're going to be sort of ostracized from your camp to a degree. And that's resulted in some really big fallout. I mean, we have some players that are staunchly coming out against the vaccine, say that they don't believe in it, that are not going to get vaccinated. And they're not allowed to sort of mingle with their teammates as the other teammates are. They have to wear masks around the facility. They get fined about $12,000 each time they break that protocol. And we even had Kirk Cousins, who's a starting quarterback, who was on a fully guaranteed contract with the Vikings. His father is a preacher, and he's massively against the vaccine. And he's into these conspiracy theories, like calling it the thing of the devil and everything else. And so Kirk Cousins has decided that he's not going to get vaccinated. Now, he's the starting quarterback. This is the leader, the captain of your team that's supposed to sort of lead the ship. And he's got on the podium, Reg, and said, oh, if I have to get a plexiglass thing around me, you know, in the facility, that's what I do. But that's all well and good, Reg, if he wants to get into a sort of a Pope-mobile around the facility. But he's not really going to have plexiglass offensive linemen when he's out on the pitch, you know. So that's a massive problem.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a huge problem for the NFL. We were talking about this last year where it only took one rogue player or someone not to follow protocol to give that to everybody else on the team, and then the game started to be suspended. And look, and we saw it, like the Super Bowl, apparently they had booked out the Super Bowl last year, you know, 2 weeks out, to say, right, if this all goes pear-shaped, well, then at least we have some leeway to postpone it for a while. Mm. And they can't really afford that to happen and break out, as we all know, again, because these squads are massive, Reg. 53-man roster, and then you've got all of the support staff that goes with it, especially because they're traveling across the country, which to us, you know, for us to go from Wicklow to Cork, that's fine. It's a drive, whereas for them, it's plane rides, multiple planes, putting people on different planes.
Different states with different case numbers and everything else.
Exactly.
Well, it's going to be one to watch. Look, Stephen, it's been great chatting to you. We're going to have you back on again next week to get your predictions for week one, of course, which starts on the 9th, which is a Thursday, I think, and then we'll have all the Sunday games back to normal from then. But great chatting to you, and we'll catch up with you again next week and get all of those predictions. Thanks a lot. That's Stephen O'Brien there, ukpackers.co.uk, giving us all of the thoughts on the pre-season of NFL, which of course gets underway on the 9th of September. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we'll be talking to Deirdre Smith about the golf, and George McDonough will be on to give us his lucky 15. Don't go away. And you're very welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Time for golf now. Delighted to be joined on the line by Deirdre Smith, talking about the wonderful achievement of Leona Maguire to get picked on the Solheim Cup. Good morning, Deirdre. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are you?
Very good. Yeah, it was a wonderful achievement, no question about it, but well deserved, it has to be said, on the form.
Yeah, absolutely. hard to believe, really, in her rookie year that she's done this. You know, Katrina Matthew in her analysis of it feels that she's not a rookie, and that's some praise from Katrina Matthew, who's already a Solheim Cup winner herself, and Solheim Cup captain winner and a major winner. So high praise from Katrina Matthew, and look, we can see it, and it's good that the elite out there can see it too. But I don't think we really know the effect of her achievement until years to come, really. It's groundbreaking, really, for us. And it's akin to kind of Katie Taylor and Rachel Blackmore and what they've done earlier this year. I mean, you just have to look at how Kelly Harrington won this year at the Olympics. Yeah. I mean, that success was paved by Katie Taylor's achievements years ago. So it's just, look, it's something I've been waiting to happen since I started to play golf. And I'm delighted to say that I saw it happen, and it can only be good news for Irish golf, Irish ladies golf.
Oh, no question about it. But I mean, you know, Leona has been pushing so hard for the top finishes there in all the recent competitions that she's been in. It's not surprising in many ways that she would be considered, but you still have to say, given the level of competition there is in women's golf now, it's a huge achievement. Is it a lot of pressure to put on young shoulders, do you think?
Look, Leona had pressure on her shoulders since she was 11 years of age. I mean, I remember playing in a tournament in the European Club, and she was 11, and she was competing with all of us, you know, and she just took it in her stride, and she has learned over the years how to deal with it. And then, you know, she's gone through the American college system. She's played for Ireland. She's played Junior Solheim Cup. She's played Curtis Cup. The pressure is the same no matter what level you're playing at. Mm. You know, and it's about handling that and understanding yourself in those pressure cooker situations. And I know it'll be a step up, but she'll use all her experience. And look, all she has to do is do what she's always done. She doesn't have to do anything different in the Solheim Cup. She's been selected because of what she's doing.
Yeah.
So she doesn't have to do anything different. You know, sometimes we feel when we go into we raise our level, or we go into a more difficult or a more prestigious event, that we have to do something different. We don't.
Yeah.
You know, she's picked based on what she's doing. She doesn't have to do anything different. And, you know, she'll have all that experience. She'll know what to do. She won't change what she does, and hope that it's good enough. That's it. And if it's not good enough on the day, she'll go back and she'll analyze it, and she'll see where she has to be better the next time. But I mean, the most remarkable thing for me when you know, all this week, when we found out that she was selected, was that she actually set it as a goal this year.
Hmm.
I mean, that's remarkable.
Amazing.
For me.
Yeah, that
it's no surprise now that she's on it. So I think that augurs really well for her performance, that she'll go in there feeling she belongs. And, you know, she's the world number one amateur. She's used to playing with these girls. But she ran into a couple of hot players like Nelly Korda and a few others this year. She would have an LPGA event on her belt. So, I don't think that there'll be pressure. There'll be pressure on the first tee. There'll be pressure, of course, you know, on over certain shots. But she just has to do what she's always done, and she'll know that. But, you know, she knows better than me.
Shane Lowry seems to be playing himself into selection around the Ryder Cup as well, and good form from Rory McIlroy coming into play as well.
Yeah, I'm sure Harrington is absolutely delighted that Lowry has come into form, because I'm sure he wants him in the team room. I mean, I think he will be akin to Poulter in his contribution to the team. And you need those people in the team room. And then Rory, what a performance the other day, 8 under on Thursday, 2 under yesterday. But that can happen. But he didn't shoot himself in the foot or play himself out of the tournament. I mean, DeChambeau went mad, of course, but it is a bomber's course, so it suits him. So look, I think Rory's well in the hunt there, and I'd say Harrington is licking his lips.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, plenty to look forward to, and of course, more so the Solheim Cup, of course, which is coming up in August, and we will really look forward to that. Deirdre, as always, pleasure talking to you, and we'll catch up again very shortly.
Okay, Reggie, take care.
Take care. That's Deirdre Smith there, of course, one of Ireland's leading amateurs in her own right, giving us her thoughts on the wonderful achievement of Leona Maguire getting onto that Solheim Cup team for Europe, which, of course, is taking place in the Inverness Club in Ohio. And that will be on the 31st of August to September the 6th. Just had a look at the website there, and there's a lovely picture of one of the greens, but it looks like the Cúchulainn roller coaster up in Tato Park. It's so steep, the green. I wouldn't like to be trying to put on that one, but anyway, I never have to worry about it. Okay, it's time to have a look at the horse racing now, and delighted to be joined on the line by George McDonagh. Good morning, George. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. How could one be? What a great week. Ronaldo returns to United. The whole world is happy.
Everybody's happy, I know. Ken couldn't even do the headlines this morning. He's in such shock over it. So he's having a rest. That's how much it affected him. But we'll get to that a little bit later in the football part of the show. But yeah, there's still plenty going on in the horse racing too. And a beautiful weather for it all this week as well. And what have you got for us?
Absolutely fantastic, Reggie. Fantastic weather, good racing at the Curragh last night, and we look forward to, in a couple of weeks' time, with restrictions easing back a bit, everybody, but hopefully we'll be able to head to Listowel for some fantastic racing. But today we have four selections for you. Last week was best forgotten, I think. They tried hard, is all I can say, all our selections, but they didn't try hard enough, I suppose, for financial reward. It happens, Reggie, it happens. Starting off today, Reggie, at Newmarket, the 245, a horse called Royal Scimitar. This hopeful stakes is a listed contest, and it generally goes to a progressive horse, I've found over the years. And there are some of these that you have to give a chance to, but Tab Deed, I think, is better on a flat track, and he'll make the market. And Royal Scimitar has run well, has been the last twice been beaten in blanket finishes, been beaten fourth and third, and been beaten a total of less than a length between both races. He ran very well behind Black Rod in the July meeting on this track. The real fast ground is going to suit. He was run at Ascot in the Shergar Cup race, won by Mitras on Fire, was on easy ground, and there wasn't enough cover in the race, and I think this horse will win Royal Scimitar. He'll certainly go close. That the price is, I think, is very good value. My second selection, also at Newmarket, is a horse called Live Your Dream. And isn't that a great phrase for everybody, Reg? You've lived your dream long enough now, in fairness to you, so you've enjoyed life, and you should back this. 355. He's only ran seven times for a four-year-old. He's won four of those. Won at the all-weather meeting at Newcastle earlier in the season. He's second to Spanish Kiss at York in a 14 furlong handicap in John Smith's Cup day. Was excellent form. His last time out, though, win at Newmarket, when he came from last to first, round the unfavoured side of the track, round the outside on the July course to beat Global Storm, really caught my eye. Patsy Cosgrove rides today, and I think Live Your Dream is a very progressive horse, and despite 9 stone 10, I think will win. He runs for in the blue colours of Godolphin, who my third selection also does. That's in the 335 at Goodwood, the Celebration Mile. Goodwood, as many people know, is a very quirky track. You've got to be on the front end, I always find, and horses that can get unbalanced coming down a hill won't be suited. And this is where the big danger to Chinnett is the big danger to my selection, Ben Battle. Ben Battle we haven't seen since last September, when he was third behind Kimiko, who had won the Guineas earlier in the season in the Joel Stakes at Newmarket. And prior to that, we didn't see he won in Qatar, of all places. And he also has two wins in the Maidan Racing Carnival in Dubai. He's a bit of a globetrotter, doesn't mind a long break. He is a seven-year-old, but Ushi Murphy, superb tactical jockey across channel, rides here, and I think this will win Ben Battle in the 335. And finally, fourth and final selection, Reg, is the Nap of the day, and that is probably because I think the horse's value at 4-1, 9-2 each way. That's a horse called Dance Fever in the 225 at Goodwood, trained by Clive Cox, the mount of Adam Kirby. This horse has come up against a couple of decent animals in his last two runs. He won 3 runs ago, beaten Golden Freeze at Leicester. Really battled because he'd been hampered twice in that race. He got a couple of bumps a furlong down. He then ran third in the big international 7 furlong handicap on King George Day at Ascot behind Dania. And Dania is thought by many to be quite a progressive animal. Star over Ryan. He was beaten. He came home well in that contest, and since then went to Doncaster, went off 6-4 favourite, but caught a right tartar in a horse called Mujo Wedded, got in a bit under the radar, nailed Dance Fever close home. But I think the nature of this good wood track will suit Dance Fever. Adam Kirby gets on here, and I think the very fast ground is going to aid our cause as well. And that would be my nap of the four, Reggie. Dance Fever.
Goodwood, looking forward to that one. Okay, we'll keep an eye on those. Any other news from during the week?
No, Reg, quite weak enough racing. Yeah. Good racing at Bellewstown. Great to see the Bellewstown. A little, the Ledger's declarations. The second entry stage for the said Ledger. Now, Hurricane Lane is going to, this is on 11th of September, but of course that will be the return of Ronaldo, so that will be the main cause of that day. But the Mediterranean is a really interesting horse for me. Hurricane Lane is already in a 4-6 favourite for the Ledger on Saturday week, Saturday fortnight, 11th of September. I don't think this Hurricane Lane will stay 14 furlongs. The Mediterranean has caught my eye in all his runs this season. He's second in the Voltigeur, a renowned trial last time out at York. When he was passed by the winner, Yabir, he battled back again. They put him off out in front. I think this horse is guaranteed to get the 14 furlongs. Some bookmakers are still offering 20-1 each way. And he, I know it's anti-post. We must be guaranteed he gets a run. But the fact that he's been left in the race tells me that the O'Brien Coolmore team are targeting this race. And I think at the prices, the Mediterranean might be worth a second look for people who like an anti-post bet, Reggie, for the Ledger.
Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on that one. Very quickly, there must be chats around racing circles now after seeing the numbers in Croke Park and everything else. I see Ruby Walsh talking about it in the paper and the Examiner about getting a few numbers back in. There has to be chat about getting bigger numbers in shortly.
There is, Reggie. I would be quite friendly with Pat Healy, the chairman of the Listowel Race Committee, great photographer, great racing man. And I've been speaking to Pat the last couple of weeks. We're going to Listowel in a work capacity. 500 people is the max at the moment. In Galway, in 2 weeks' time, is 500.
Yeah.
But there is a feeling now within racing circles that they will be start to be relaxed. And they will cover themselves by saying a lot of these will be test events, but we can see a couple of thousand. The key is the Dublin Festival of the Irish Champions Weekend, should I say, and the Curragh and Leopardstown. 5,000 for them, Reggie. And I think gradually, and speaking to Michael Maloney on Monday night last, the CEO of Galway Racecourse, whilst they have 500 for the September, they're really targeting.
Yeah.
And courses are beginning to plan now, Reggie. But I do think, after seeing those crowds in Croke Park last week, and we'll see them again in a couple of weeks' time, I think that all sport, every sport, Reggie, we're looking at our own sport of rugby as well.
Yeah.
We're all hopeful. A lot of test events going on. But I think test events is the key.
That's
everybody goes, behaves themselves. When I say behaves themselves, enjoys themselves, Reggie, but do what we're told. All we've got to do, people are doing this for all for our own good.
Okay.
We do what we're told and get all our friends back. And hopefully, come 2022, Reggie, we'll have a great year of sport.
We'll be back. Okay, George, that's wonderful. We'll chat to you again next week. Have a good week.
Thanks, Reggie, and enjoy.
Take care. That's George McDonough there giving us his Lucky 15. And we'll get that Lucky 15 up on all of our social media channels for you to take down. We're going to take a break for news. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news. We'd love to hear from you. You can text us on 087 1155 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. And we're on all of the social media channels as well. Just want to give out that lucky 15 again. George McDonough gave it to us just before the news at 10. So it's he's going to Newmarket first in the 245. It's Royal Scimitar there in the Newmarket again in the 355, Live Your Dream. Then we go to Goodwood for the 335, which is Ben Battle. And then the nap of the day is in Goodwood 2, the 225, Dance Fever. And we will get that all up on all of our social media channels as well for you to get. Okay, we're turning our attention now to women's sport. And the co-founder of hersport.ie is Niamh Tallon. And I'm delighted to be joined on the line now by Niamh. Good morning, Niamh. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Very well indeed. You know, I'm sitting here kind of reveling in the joy that we're getting all this week from our Paralympic medals. And we see the likes of Ellen Keane getting a gold. And of course, the news just in this morning as well of Katie George Dunleavy and Eve McChrystal getting the cycling in the 3,000 metres. And then you look at the likes of Kelly Harrington in boxing recently. I spoke to Deirdre earlier about Leona Maguire in golf being picked for the Solheim Cup. Nicole Turner in the final this morning as well in the Paralympics. Greta Strømøkaitė in the athletics. You would think, looking at it, that women's sport has never been in a better place. Yet, I'm chatting to you about the fact that as the kids go back to school this week, you're noticing that there does tend to be a drop-off of girls and participation in women's sport once they kind of get into that secondary school stuff. What's that all about?
Yeah, no, there's massive success, and when we're looking at the international stage, I mean, it's incredible what the athletes are doing. But yeah, just as we start looking, to go back to school, that the statistic is that twice as many girls drop out of sport as boys by the age of 14. So just something for parents and teachers to be aware of as everybody gets back to school. It's been a really unusual past 2 years, with COVID and everything, very haphazard, and I'd say not normal for children in terms of sport and education at all. So there can seem like a really easy way out of sport, and we already have enough challenges, I think, as it is to retain girls in their young teenage years and later in sport. It's really key, I think, for the junior cycle in particular, with that age of 14. Like, there's a big change from primary school to secondary school. It can be very overwhelming in terms of the amount of subjects that you're taking on, thinking of all the classes that you're doing. Like, in some schools it can be between 11 and 13 subjects, and it can seem like a massive change, but sport really is so important. You can get so much from it, and that parents and teachers and the students themselves should really be looking at it, and not looking at it as something that kind of hinders their education, but something that, like, it can really help, like, add to their life and really benefit them in the long run.
And I find it surprising in many ways that is the case now, because in the past there weren't the same level of sport available to women. I mean, you're looking at the GAA, 52,000 I think in Croke Park last year for the Women's All-Ireland Final, which is an incredible number. I think it's, somebody said to me during the week, it's one of the highest attended events, single event attendances ever. You're looking at the success of all of the athletes that I mentioned earlier. And it seems somewhat surprising that with the advent and progress of so many sports, that the opposite would be the case, that people would be actually dropping away from sport when there's so much available. Why is it?
There can be a lot going on, for young people. And, sometimes you kind of forget what it's like to be 12 or 13 or 14 years old. So, I know I've mentioned there in terms of the change from primary to secondary school, but also there's a lot of body changes at this point for girls, for boys as well. But, like, if you think about it, like, there's things like periods, development of, hair on their body and that type of thing. And like, something like shaving can be such a big deal for somebody that's 12 or 13 or 14. They can start to become self-conscious about different things. Periods in particular, like, it can be something that can be very overwhelming, for somebody. Hopefully there's someone at home that they can have a conversation with and can give them advice and help with that. But, it can be a lot to think about, in terms of whether it's PE or if they're playing, like you're talking about football there. Like, if you're playing a football match, if they're playing, two halves, you have half time as well, you have warm-up time. Is it a home game? Is it an away game? Like, what are the facilities available? Like, there's a lot of thought goes into it when it comes to periods for all sports, really. And it really is about, like, helping them, giving them advice. Like, 50% of the population has a period or will have a period or has had a period at some point, so yeah. Like, let's try and help them with it and talk about it, like, make it a, like, not a taboo subject. It still is a little bit, and often I think people, when they kind of finish up out of secondary school, become even more comfortable talking about their periods. But like, that drop off is happening kind of at, you know, 12, 13, 14, which is, it's a critical time. You know, there's a lot, like, people are starting to think about sports bras. Do I wear them? Do I not? Body image in general. So, you know, yes, there's lots of great things happening for women in sport at the moment, and you will retain a number of young people, but it's about, like, what about, is there 5 or 10% more that we can keep if we just help them with some of these things, if we just talk about some of these topics? You know, there's lots of people out there that have experienced periods or being self-conscious about, you know, whether it's hair on their legs or under their arms. Like, let's just talk about it and help them with it, make these topics, you know, not approachable, but, you know, make them open and you know, that we can discuss them.
I suppose as well, rightly or wrongly, traditionally there's been a lot of men involved in coaching in sport,
yeah,
across the board, for both sexes, and, you know, men, you know, by its very nature, they'll feel uncomfortable talking about the subject or whatever. Is there any programs that you guys, or maybe Sport Ireland or other organizations, are trying to put in place to maybe educate coaches that, you know, look, it's okay to talk about these things, they're a natural part of life, and here's what you can do to make it better?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, look, the coaches need help too, and you have to look at the different organisations. Like, what's the setup, or is there kind of a liaison there that maybe a coach doesn't feel comfortable talking about it if they haven't, you know, experienced it themselves? Like, a male coach hasn't experienced having a period, so is there a parent or a liaison in the club that can talk about these topics? Or, you know, we actually are hoping to help educate you know, people around this, and actually talk to, you know, different sports teams and you know, kids of different age groups about some of these topics, and help them become more comfortable, you know, talking about it and in dealing with some of the things. Sometimes help can be gotten from older age groups. You know, if you have a senior team, or if you have senior athletes, like, you know, I know in some clubs they've had, you know, older athletes talk about periods, and it can then make it, it actually just starts the conversation almost with, you know, 13 and 14 year olds amongst themselves. So then they kind of realise, oh, everybody else is going through this too, and the older athletes have, you know, experienced it, and they've made it to 18, 19, 20 or whatever it is. But it actually can start the conversation among the younger girls themselves, which can be helpful, because then they kind of realise, okay, it's not just me. Yes, I can ask someone for a pad or a tampon if I need, and, you know, if I don't feel well, that's okay, I can tell my coach, or, you know, whatever it is, because there's a whole you know, it's not just straightforward in dealing with some of these things. Everybody experiences it differently. You know, in terms of the self-consciousness about, like, leaking or something like that, like, that can be massive for young girls. You know, and we should be hopefully heading in a direction where, you know, young girls and boys, like, are actually, like, supporting each other and saying, oh, just, you know, by the way, did you know that you leaked there or something? And it's not a big deal, where I have heard cases of people making fun of people when that happens, and that, yeah, can really put people off, and like, they really won't want to come back to that environment if that's the environment that's created.
Yeah, funnily enough, I think it's more the older people that need to be educated than the younger people, because I know from looking at my own sons, whether it be around diversity or inclusion or people, mm-hmm, of, you know, different abilities, or, you know, the fact that they're playing football, boys and girls together, right up into the age of sort of 12, 13, it's no big deal to the younger generation. So I think it's easier to get the message across to younger people than it is maybe to older people, and it wouldn't be as much of a taboo subject to them. So, maybe adults need to be more adult about this, is the way to look at it. But in general, though, it has to be said, I know your website, hersport.ie, is really championing women's sport and doing a great job in that. But it is fair to say as well, though, that women's sport has never been in a better place.
Yeah, look, everybody's really, you know, positive about women's sport at the moment in general. And yes, like, we are achieving on the international stage. You know, there's been some great results over the past couple of months and the past couple of years, but there really is a long way to go. And it can sometimes be, you know, the easy option to say, oh, everything's great now. You know, like, I hear cases all the time. Like, we get messages all the time from young girls saying, you know, the boys got this, you know, we're not getting the same, or we were asked to leave this pitch because, you know, X team was you know, training, and it's people of all age groups. When it comes into some clubs, like, is the funding the same for the men and women? Is the coaching the same? Like, you know, there still is a long way to go. And like you're saying, it can be about changing opinions of an older generation as well. And I think what's important for the younger generation is, like, while you're saying people are open-minded to things, is actually that we, you know, give them the right information and get them to continue to be that way, and that they don't get sucked into, you know, some of the culture that has been created over the past number of years, and that they are inclusive. Because, you know, sometimes if you know, in terms of funding, like if there's a men's team and a women's team, like oftentimes, you know, the men's team, they probably will want the money for themselves or whatever it might be. But it's about looking at, you know, different clubs and making sure what's happening is fair. You know, to develop women's sport at grassroots level, you know, you have to put the right structures in place. And, you know, whether it's, you know, funding, coaching, and you know, some of these conversations that we're talking about, helping people through talking about periods and shaving and sports bras and all that type of thing. But it is heading in the right direction, but there certainly is a long way to go. And you know, it can be easy to say, like, look, it's great now. It's not, you know, there is still a long way to go. Like, even look at you know, the two international rugby teams that we have. You know, we have a fully professional you know, senior men's rugby team, and I think as of yesterday or the day before, we have Linda Dugang is now going to play professionally for a French team, but she would be the only athlete that's doing that. Mm. You know, we have our international team all working, trying to manage, you know, work and you know, playing for Ireland, and there's so much work and hard effort has to go into them representing Ireland, and then you have a fully funded you know, men's outfit. So it is still quite different, you know, in some sports. We are working towards, you know, a more level playing field, but you know, hopefully over you know, the next few years, we will start to see change. Like, even if we're talking about media coverage, you know, it's 6% of sports media coverage goes to women in sport.
Yeah.
So there's huge disparity there as well.
Yeah, there is. There's no doubt about that. But it is also true to say as well, though, Niamh, you know, it's not just about the sex, whether it be women or men. It's about the popularity of the sport as well. There'll be plenty of people listening this morning who would cite reference to you of many minority sports across the country. Men sports, you know, leaving sex out of it, whether it be male or female, and they just don't get the coverage because they're not the glamorous sports. You know, it could be anything from, there's any number of sports up there in Sport Ireland that you can go into the campus and see, and you'll hear nothing about it, whether it be taekwondo, judo, archery, whatever, you know. So it comes down to commercial reality as well. Let's say, for example, women's tennis is very well funded. There's a reason for that. You know, it's on TV all the time. It's in the public eye, and other sports are trying to catch up with that. So I suppose in an ideal world, it would be great to see every sport funded properly, but it's hard to get to that level purely because of visibility, I'd imagine, rather than whether it be women or men.
Yeah, no, look, absolutely. Like, it's, you know, you have to look at the history and where we've come from. You know, the place of women in society has changed, you know, over the past number of years. And you look at, like, when was the LGFA founded? It really is very recent. So yeah, you're correct in saying that. And in terms of, you know, we're getting more people attending those All-Ireland finals, and hopefully it will start to feed back to the semi-finals and the quarter-finals, and we'll just continue to build the community. You know, there's a lot of hard work has to be done in terms of building some of these sports up, opening people's minds to it, and it is heading in the right direction. But it's interesting that you mentioned tennis, because there was a huge effort from Billie Jean King to change that. And I know there is still actually conversation in terms of prize money, so that it's not always equal, you know, for some competitions for men and women at this point. But I think tennis is really interesting, and the work that was done a number of years ago by Billie Jean King and some other women to really highlight women's tennis. And we actually take for granted now, I think, as society, like, the fact that it's integrated, that the, you know, men's and women's matches are happening, like they're alternating and that type of thing. And I think there's a lot that we could learn, and other sports could actually learn, you know, from tennis and the model that they have kind of used. But look, in terms of some of the minority sports, you're right, like it does depend. In some sports, yes, men and women are treated very similarly if they're really a very, very small community. But even in some of these sports that we're talking about, maybe, you know, Olympic sports, maybe we'll call them, or some of the Sport Ireland ones, and, you know, women are still, you know, struggling to kind of get either the same coverage or same support. And, you know, it's about, like, kind of, helping it from the grassroots level. You know, we're trying to help promote them, promote female athletes from all different sports, you know, so that it can open doors maybe to sponsorship and can kind of alleviate some of the pressures that they have and allow them to achieve. And some of it is really about creating the belief there as well that they can do it. And we're seeing more and more, you know, female role models. And, you know, it's not that they haven't been there before, they have, but like, let's highlight them. And I think social media has been massive. Like, we've noticed, you know, for sure that there's a lot of female athletes are actually, they're creating their own brands. They're really building their own brand so that they can become recognizable. And some of their male counterparts don't have to do the same thing because they're kind of picked up, you know, along the way by reporters and that. But also, the women are putting the effort in.
Also about highlighting the quality of the sport. I mean, you know, for a lot of years, the attitude would have been particularly amongst men and predominantly amongst men that, you know, so that's rubbish anyway. They can't play it. You know, they're no good at it. But then when you sit down and you look at the quality that's in women's golf, they're as good as the men. Tennis, better to watch than the men's tennis. There's more rallies. It's more enjoyable. Ladies football, the GAA, you know, Camogie, the quality is off the charts. But it's only by actually sitting down and watching them that you see that. So I think that's equally as important about promoting how high the quality of the sport in women's sport is.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, it's about that open-mindedness. And, you know, I know, you know, a couple of years ago when people start to tune into the Women's Six Nations more, you know, they're sitting down, they're watching, and they're going, actually, this is a great game. And then you've actually converted somebody to tune into the following year. So, you know, people can say, oh, it's not as good or whatever, but have they actually watched it? Have they actually sat down to see what it's like? So it really is about just getting someone to sit down and say and tune in to see it and see what the standard is. And like, in terms of some of the sports, you know, maybe it's not as quick, maybe it's not as skillful, and you have to think about, like, okay, well, where has the funding you know, being and support being for some of these sports? You know, of course some of the men's games might be quicker or faster or whatever, but they've had like full-time opportunity. Like, if they're playing full-time and the women aren't, like, they have a huge amount of time to put into this and to develop their skills. So we are playing catch-up in some respect, but there's, you know, insane standard. And I know in terms of Gaelic football, we've spoken to some of the athletes and they say something that's kind of developed for them over the past couple of years has been effort and strength and conditioning. So they said that there's been a huge jump in skill and in kind of excitement in some of their matches in recent years because their strength and conditioning has changed, their approach to training, and they've just become a more professional outfit in lots of counties and they're getting more support. So we're going to see that develop across the country and across a number of sports as they get more support, as they get more funding, get better coaching, like that type of thing, they're going to see the sports progress. And then, you know, you'll open more people's minds because they'll say, wow, that actually was, you know, better than I expected or whatever it might be. It's only going to get better because they are, you know, we are heading in the right direction and catching up, you know, in terms of, you know, some of that development that the men have had. Look, it's been there historically for years. And, you know, women's sport, like, think about, you know, 1930, like, were women playing sports? Or were they, you know, just the inclusion for women. Like, you know, I've spoken to my granny about it before, and, you know, they exercised, you know, they didn't play sports. She said they used to play Camogie, but nobody kept score. Yeah. And people stopped playing sport kind of at 12 and 13 years old as they started to hit puberty. And there was a place for women in society, and that has changed. You know, culturally we have changed. So all of that has to be taken into consideration. It's not just tomorrow everything's going to be equal. Absolutely not. It's a long journey, and we're going to get there, but it's just a matter of when.
Absolutely. Well, you're doing your part with hersport.ie, that's for sure. Anyway, lovely chatting to you, Niamh. Really enjoyed that. Thanks for giving us all of that info, and we'll catch up with you again shortly.
No problem. Thanks a million for having me on.
Take care. That's Niamh Tallon there, one of the co-founders of hersport.ie. Great website championing women's sport right across all the various different categories. So we're going to take a quick break now. But when we come back, we'll be talking GAA and, of course, that wonderful semi-final later on today. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to insuremyvan.ie, here every Saturday from 9 to 11. Text us on 087 1155 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Well, the second semi-final takes place after a little bit of a delay as Kerry take on Tyrone today at 3:30. Of course, the highly anticipated semi-final to see who will be facing Mayo in a couple of weeks' time. Kerry are the favourites. Many people think they got the job done before they've even thrown the ball in yet, but I'm joined on the line now. Paddy Hunter from the Ulster Herald might have a different opinion. Good morning, Paddy. How are you? Yeah, hello, Paddy. Are you there, Paddy? Okay, we're just going to try and get Paddy back. That line just seems to have been dropped there for the moment, but we'll certainly try and get him back. Yes, I suppose the other big news today that I'll be talking to Alan Cawley about very shortly is the fact that the return of the King, as it's being headlined by many people, Ronaldo back at Old Trafford. And I know Ken will be certainly delighted to hear that one as he... looks at his beloved Manchester United to see how they're getting on, and the likes of Bruno Fernandes will be happy to see his teammate back there. But we will try and get back to the GA now. I think we have Paddy on the line. Good morning, Paddy. Can you hear me? No, we don't seem to have Paddy there. It's just not coming through on that one. Okay, we're going to take a break now and try and fix that connection with Paddy if we can. And when we come back, we'll be talking GA. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get Paddy Hunter back on the line. The modern technology and what it is. But I had a chat with him before we had come on air, and he was quite confident that Tyrone were going to put it up to Kerry today. So we'll just have to see how that one unfolds. Certainly is going to be a cracking game and one that we can very much look forward to a little bit later on. We are joined on the line now, though, by Alan Cawley to talk football. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. I'm good. Do you want me to preview the GAA as well, Reggie?
Well, would you fancy Kerry? I'd say you might be going leaning towards Kerry, you would.
I actually think Tyrone might cause a bit of a surprise and an upset. I don't think it's as one-sided as people are making out, Reggie, because you look at Tyrone over the years and how obviously resilient they are and tough to break down and stuff. So I don't think it'll be as easy as people are making out.
Yeah, you could be right there. There's no doubt about it. I feel Kerry will get the job done, but I definitely don't think it'll be quite as easy as everyone is making out. I'd have to agree with you on that. And it wasn't easy during the week either for Rovers. A tough night against Flora Tallinn. Declan Drake actually caught up with Stephen Bradley after the game. Let's have a listen to what he had to say.
I felt the turning point in the game was the goal. We give away the goal and that really knocked us. And you could see then they completely grew from that. And that was the one that hurt us. I don't know. Sometimes it's nice to get a kick in the backside to give you a reminder that the basics needs to be right. Unfortunately, we got it last week and conceded four goals. Tonight, I thought we were very good. We limited them to one chance, I think, in the game. And on another night, Alan saves that quite comfortably. Look, over the two legs, we made some really bad mistakes, but to be fair to them, they were a better team over the two legs and deserve to go through. Fantastic experience. Every experience in Europe is good, whether you win, lose or draw, because you're learning, you're becoming better. We will be better for these games that we played this year. And the aim is to make sure we go and win the league and put ourselves in a really strong position again in Europe next year.
Domestically, it doesn't get much bigger than Sunday for you. A cup tie against Bohemians at Denny Mount Park. You've got to be without most likely Sean Hoare for that game, even.
Yeah, I think we'll have to see in the morning, but more than likely, you look at Sean and think he's going to struggle.
The cup has been good to you over the last couple of seasons. You got to the final for the last 2 years, and the challenge of Bohemians on Sunday afternoon on Park is just about as big as it comes at the moment.
Yeah, it'd be a good game. Bows are doing well, and we know it's a difficult game, Dublin Derby obviously, but it's one we're ready for. I think tonight up until the goal we are very good, and if we bring that into Sunday we'd be fine.
Yeah, it was disappointing, no question about it. I mean, there's no arguing they were well beaten, as it turns out, in the end. But what did you take from it?
Yeah, they were well beaten, Reggie. Yeah, I would disagree with Stephen Bradley saying they were very good. They were very good for one half over the two games. Last week, the damage was done, certainly over there in the away leg. They were too naive. The approach to the game, especially in a way European game against tough opposition, they were just so open. And I'm not sure what the plan was. And even you look at the first half last week and how poor they were, and you think you'd rectify that at half time and make a couple of changes and just tighten up a little bit. And it was the exact same thing in the second half, and they obviously shipped four goals. So if you're conceding four goals in any match, let alone a European match, you're giving yourself a mountain to climb. And that was the case, obviously, going into the game then on Thursday night. And even though last week they created plenty of chances, so I gave them a little bit of hope going into the game Thursday night because I felt they would create chances. Ultimately, it was down to could they keep the opposition out, and they couldn't do that the other night, Reggie. They obviously conceded a soft goal. Mandrew gave the ball away, and obviously Alan Manis should have saved it as well. It was a mistake from him. But once that goal went in, the whole thing turned flat and it was game over then. So they played quite well in the first half the other night without creating any clear-cut chances. I think Aaron Green had won, but they certainly were on top in the first half. But over the four halves and the two legs, one half is not going to get you through, and it's an opportunity missed because you would have looked at Flora Tallinn before the tie and thought they have a real chance of beating these and getting to a group stage. So that's, I suppose, the major disappointment from a Shamrock Rovers point of view and from the league's point of view, because I don't think they've done themselves justice over the two legs, Reggie. And certainly, as I say, the approach, and that comes down to the management team, the approach going into the first leg was all wrong.
Would you say, though, Alan, is there any danger that maybe there was too much going on all at once and that the squad, you know, fatigue set in and that, you know, that told in the end?
No, I don't think that's any excuse whatsoever, Reggie. These are full-time players, train well, they're all fit lads. I don't think that even came into it, to be honest with you. I think it just came down to the fact that you look at Flora Tallinn, I know they were protecting a two-goal lead, but you look at them on Thursday night, how organised and disciplined they were in their performance in the away leg, and I think that's what let Shamrock Rovers down in the first leg. They just, as I say, they were so open, so disorganised. Every time Flora Tallinn attacked, they looked like they were going to score. And even when they got it back to 3-2, and you think, we'll get out of jail here, lads, with a 3-2, and we'll take it and run, Flora Tallinn went down the pitch and they scored again with only 3 or 4 minutes to go. So they managed the game all wrong even at that stage. So that's ultimately the disappointment. And I think that's where obviously Stephen Bradley look back. And they will learn from it. They'll have to learn from it. But I think he'll probably have to learn from it as well, because you can't go away, especially in a European game, and play as open as what you would in a league game here, because it's a totally different kettle of fish. And to be fair to Shamrock Rovers, we all know they're the best team here. They'll play against 95% of the opposition here and they'll dominate possession. But it's a totally different ball game when you're going away from home against European teams.
Well, they have got Bowes, of course, tomorrow in the second round of the Cup. I'd say Bowes, they've got a good run of form as well. Of late, solid squad, good team. And with Rovers now with that disappointment, they might be licking their lips a little bit at this one and thinking that this is a scalp they can take.
Yeah, it'll be an absolute cracker, Reggie. And to be fair to Bowes, they've obviously been great over the last number of years and they've had a great summer with the European adventure they've been on. The disappointment for them is the slow start in the league, but they've certainly rectified that over the last few weeks and they've been going great guns. So this is going to be an absolute cracker. For me, they're the two best teams in the league. I know obviously St. Pat's are second and Sligo Rovers at the moment are ahead of Bowes, but for me, these are the best two teams in the league. And I'm really looking forward to the game. I'm heading to Daly Mount tomorrow. It should be an absolute cracker. The only disappointment again is that we don't have a full house, because there would be a full house at this. But in terms of the game itself and obviously the two teams going up against each other, it'll be a really difficult tie for Shamrock Rovers. And as you say, coming off the back of that disappointing European result, and Bohemians have had a full week to prepare for this, so they'll be ready to go. There'll be a plan in place, and it should be as an absolute cracker. I'm really looking forward to this game.
Absolutely, so am I. The other one, second round game, Finn Harps took care of Derry City 1-0. A penalty from Owalabi. Some would see that as a surprise.
Yeah, I would see it as a surprise as well, Reggie. But to be fair to Finn Harps, maybe we're a bit hard on them. I know they went through a bad run there where I think they had only one win in 10. But the last 3 weeks, they'd picked up form and they won 3 in the league. And you're looking at that game last night thinking, I felt it would have been close going into it because they had picked up their run of form. Derry City, on the other hand, have been in a great run of form as well. And they had won 4 on the bounce in the league. So you would edge towards Derry in that one. So it is a bit of a surprise, but it's not a massive surprise, to be fair to Finn Harps, because they have picked up. And it's a huge result for them as well, Reggie, beating Derry City, a local Northwest derby. Awolabi, as you say, getting the penalty. So if they find themselves in the quarter final of the cup now, Ollie Horgan will tell you obviously it's all about staying in the league, and it is for them. But I think that's a nice and welcome distraction for them to have that good run in the form. And when you get to the quarter final stage, obviously we spoke about Shamrock Rovers and Bowes. One of the big boys are going to go out tomorrow, and who knows then who you might get in the draw. Like, there's obviously Waterford in the draw, day one as well. UCD are still in the draw. All of a sudden, the draw could be favourable to you, and you find yourself in a semi final all of a sudden, Finn Harp. So, and it gives themselves a chance. But I think tomorrow, obviously, whoever wins with Bohemians and Shamrock Rovers will go into favouritism straight away. But it just gives the others a chance. Now, obviously, Dundalk are still in it, but it's not the Dundalk of old. So, anyone that plays them will think they have a chance as well. So, I just think it sets the draw up lovely for maybe that we might have a surprise winner this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's certainly a competition to look forward to in great detail as we move on. Okay, let's have a move across the water. We got to talk Premier League. Huge news last night coming through of Ronaldo going back to United, out from under the noses of City, and all the WhatsApp and Twitter groups and everything else were going crazy last night. What did you make of it, Ronaldo back to United?
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible, Reggie. I have to say, I couldn't believe it, to be honest. If someone had to say to me tomorrow, we'll be talking about Ronaldo signing for Man United by 6 o'clock in the evening, I would have laughed. I really would have. I couldn't believe the news last night. And I'm going to take me adult professional punditry hat off now, and I'm going to put me 14-year-old Man United fan hat on. And it's absolutely incredible news. It really is, Reggie. And I just think, not only for United fans and the lift it gives the club and the players and the whole lot, but I think the league in general, we just saw, I know we're critical of social media and I wouldn't be a great fan, and the advent of social media over the recent years, but I just think when you look at something like that, news breaking last night and the world going bananas, really, and that's exactly what happened. It just goes to show you, I suppose, the pull that Ronaldo has, and we all know he's a superstar, one of the greats that's ever played, and for him to come back to the club as big a Man United as well, it's just phenomenal news. And how it all came about and how the story developed, and I suppose fans were waking up yesterday thinking it looked like he might go to City, and there would have been, I always felt already that it would have been not wrong for him to go to City, but I just never thought Guardiola would have wanted him at City. I just don't think he fits what Guardiola wants in terms of the way they play in the press. He's very much an individual, and I suppose he's kind of selfish in the way he plays, that it's a lot about himself. Obviously, his goals will help the team, but I wouldn't have him down as a player who's going to fit into a structure if you're trying to press teams from the front. And that's down to the fact that he's 36 now as well, so his game has obviously changed over the years. But I think for what Man United are looking for in terms of a centre forward and the role that he plays nowadays, he's absolutely perfect, because you can have the young guns on the wings for him. You can have Bruno Fernandes and Pogba, whoever you want behind him. But if he just stays within the width of the goals where he will, and plays that number nine and be looking for poacher goals and whatever he comes up with, and his game is just about goals now, it's a phenomenal signing. Whether is a big enough signing, Reggie, to take them to win the league and overtake Chelsea and Man City, I'm still not sure, but I certainly think it'll get them closer to them too.
Well, I thought there's always been something about Ronaldo and United, like his love for the place. I never thought the City thing was real, not because of what you're saying, they're not fitting in bit. I just felt that, you know, from a legacy point of view for him, I think it would have been turning his back on the United fans too much and going against them. A bit like what I said to you about Messi with Barcelona. Now, I know Messi's hands were tied in other ways because of FIFA regulations and contract ties and all that kind of stuff. I get that. But it feels more apt that he would go back to United to finish it all off. And I don't think it really matters whether or not he's going to be the one to make the difference for them and win them the league. I mean, sitting in there beside Fernandes, I think that will help. I think he might be more comfortable than you'd think. But, you know, from a maybe drawing the best out of the rest of the squad around him, I think it's an unbelievably clever signing for United.
Oh, it's a no-brainer, Reggie. It's an absolute no-brainer. And once he became available, or I think Alex Ferguson got involved, and obviously the pull that he has and the respect that Ronaldo has for him, he often speaks about the father figure that he was like. I think it's telling, though, that he was the one that kind of got him over the line, not Solskjaer. And it goes back to the argument that we always have with Solskjaer. And there'll be a lot of pressure on him now in terms of, obviously, if he doesn't deliver this year now with Ronaldo on the books as well, he'll be a goner. But I agree with you, Reggie, in the sense that I'm glad he signed for United, because I'd love to think in his head that's the way he was thinking as well, that no way can I sign for Man City. Yeah. There's a romance and a magic about that. Yeah. And I think that's been lost in the game of late. And we all grew up with that romance. And I love the fact that over the years, Alan Shearer even going to Newcastle and not going to the superstar club at the time. Now, he might regret that, but I always felt there was a romance about that. Nowadays, I look at the superstar players and there's only one or two, three options, the ones with the money that they're going to go to. Whereas I love the fact that, as you say, Ronaldo has obviously gone back to United, hopefully for the right reasons, and for, as you say, for all the magical reasons. Also, there's something special I think about now. I know Kane wanted to leave, but I'm kind of glad he stayed with Spurs, because I see Kane as Spurs.
Yeah,
you know, that
yeah,
kind of way. Even though I absolutely love Harry Kane and I'd love to see him with United or City, but I just view Harry Kane, that's his club, that's his team. Mm. And I think that's been gone from football in recent years, obviously because of the money that's involved, and it's easy for clubs now to go out and pay whatever they want for the superstar players. But I just... You're right in the sense that it there's a romance about the fact that he's gone back as well. And to be fair to him as well, Reggie, we all know the player that he is in terms of the drive and the longevity and what he wants to achieve and the goals. He's not going back to Man United and thinking this is a swan song. Mm. In his head, he's going back thinking, I'm going to be the best player and I'm going to score all the goals and I'm going to be the golden boot winner. And that's the drive and the mentality he has. So in terms of that stuff on the pitch, that of course is going to get Man United better. But I also agree with you with the point of just having him around the dressing room and the aura that he has for bringing the likes of a Greenwood or Rashford or these boys along and improving them just by the fact that he's in their presence. Again, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think United are going to push on. They were poor last week. I thought, they should have got that result. But I don't know. I think they need someone like that who's just going to drag a bit more player focus out of them. I get what you're saying about Solskjaer, but nobody ever felt that Solskjaer was Alex Ferguson. He's not that type of manager. He's not going to be the one in complete control. He is giving some power to the players. I just didn't feel that those players were taking that on too well. And Pogba would be a perfect example, case in point. But even Pogba's form has improved dramatically from what it was last season. And now if you've got a Ronaldo around as well, these players like to impress each other, you know? They like players, good players like to show each other what they can do. And I think Ronaldo will drag the best out of the likes of Pogba.
Yeah, of course, and that'll give Pogba a lift as well. Yeah. When you see, like, you could imagine being a player, Reggie, and, like, who was the best rugby player you ever looked up to?
No, there was lots of them.
I don't know.
Obviously, Brian O'Driscoll would have been the one that was playing alongside us. He was the best player in the world at the time. Carter was playing for New Zealand.
Yeah.
You know, when they're coming into your squads or whatever, of course, you're going to feel more confident. You're going to be lifted about it. But it's the professionalism that they bring. So they step things up a certain level and, make you think, well, I'm going to emulate that, of course.
Yeah. Absolutely, and that's what I'm saying about the Pogba or Fernandes even playing. Like, Fernandes is the star at United, but he's like a shadow of the player when he plays for Portugal, because Ronaldo's the star, and that's just the way it is. So when you look at, so all those players are going to get a lift out of the fact that Ronaldo walks into the dressing room. You could imagine sitting in that dressing room and this fella walks in, and the presence I'm sure that he has, and all eyes will be on him, and he loves that. He relishes that. So it's going to give them all a lift. I would slightly disagree with you on the Solskjaer thing, though, and I know people think I'm hard on him. It's the manager's job to get all those things out of the players as well, Reggie. Yeah. And he's not, I don't think, like you mentioned last week, Southampton.
He doesn't have that temperament.
But he'll never have that. He'll never have that. And that's my point about, is he the one to bring them back to the good days? I don't think he is. I don't think he'll ever be. Yeah. Now, I might be proven wrong on that, but I don't think he'll ever be. And certainly, it kind of adds pressure. Now, he's not going to manage Ronaldo. Ronaldo will manage himself.
Yeah.
But it brings pressure on him now, the fact that obviously he has all these stars to obviously, he has to pick them and fit them all in, Reggie. You look at the attacking talent that he has now. Ronaldo's going to play every week. Greenwood is an emerging young star. Rashford, you have Cavani, Martial. You have to fit all them in now, Bruno Fernandes, Pogba. That's where the manager now has to earn his corn as well. And it's all right saying they're superstar players. It's managing egos and managing all sorts of things as well in that dressing room now with them and fitting them in. Now, it's probably a good headache to have, and I'm sure he wants that, whereas when he came in first, he would argue he didn't have the players. He has no excuses now. All the players are there in terms of the squad. Varane, Sancho, he has to deliver on it now.
Yeah, absolutely. The other cracking match to look forward to today, of course, at 5:30 in Anfield, is that Liverpool-Chelsea game. I watched Chelsea unravel Arsenal last week, is the only way I can describe it. Lukaku looked so solid in that central position. Every ball they're playing in at his feet, he's just so strong. This is going to be an absolute cracker, this one again today, Liverpool against Chelsea.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this game, Reggie, and two of the heavyweights going at it, I suppose, after only a couple of weeks into the season, so it should be a cracker. You look at Chelsea as well, and you're right about Lukaku, but there's one sure thing. He won't be doing that to the likes of Van Dijk or Liverpool. Arsenal were so bad last week, and obviously trying to deal with him. And not alone, I have a bit of sympathy for the centre-half, Mari, trying to mark him. But the problem was the amount of balls they allowed get into Lukaku's feet. So you need to stop that at source. And there was no protection whatsoever in front of the centre-halves trying to stop balls into Lukaku's feet. Because once he gets it into his feet as a centre-forward holding off, because he's tough to deal with physically for any player, never mind just Mari last week or holding or whatever the case may be. Mm. Once the ball goes into his feet like that and you've runners off him or he can roll you, you're doomed. You're toast at that stage. So the problem was allowing the ball obviously come from midfield and the amount of easy balls through to him as well. So there'll be a lot more protection for the likes of Van Dijk and Gomez or Matip or whoever it is that plays in front of that back four. So I'm really looking forward to the game. It should be a cracker. I think Liverpool have had a great start to the season. It'll be a good test for them as well because they've had a couple of easy enough games, Norwich and Burnley. So it'll be a good test for them to see where they're at. But I always felt when Liverpool have their full complement of players, I still think they're every bit as good as City or Chelsea. So it'll be good to see where they're at now, obviously, going up against Chelsea. And I've tipped Chelsea to win the league. So yeah. It should be an absolute cracker.
Yeah, no, I know you have, and they will be good. I mean, City are the interesting one. They're not going to have much of a challenge against them with Arsenal. Like, you know, Arteta is being given the time, it seems, but and he's determined that he's going to get things right, according to himself. But it just looks so poor last week, Arsenal. They're just a poor team. That's the way I can only describe it.
Yeah, they were very poor, Reggie. And that's the problem. Whatever about, I suppose, you look at the individuals and the limitations amongst the squad. But if you're talking about Arteta and going into that game against Chelsea last week in a plan, how was nobody protecting the back four for balls into Lukaku's feet? And that falls at the manager's feet for me because we can all see that. How can he not see that? So that's the worry I have because I don't think he's addressing the major issue.
But
and
does
we
he
all
have
know
anyone
the major
that
issue.
Could address that issue, though? That's the question, you know? That's the bigger problem.
But he
might have seen it as well, but not have that and be able to do anything about it.
Yeah, but I still think you'd play a player in there or a defensive midfielder with a mindset that obviously that's what he's told. And if he's not doing it, you wouldn't be playing him. So I would think the likes of Xhaka are one of them. Like we saw Xhaka in the Euros and he was brilliant with Switzerland. So why can't he replicate that with Arsenal? And that comes down to what demands maybe he's putting on Xhaka maybe. But 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, it looked like he was going out the door and then he was the captain. There's so much chopping and changing with players as well, Reggie. Fellas that you think are deadwood at Arsenal and then they turn up and play. Like I mentioned that Chambers last week or during the week, Kolasinac played and I'm thinking, is he still at Arsenal? Yeah. You know, there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on as well. So there's major problems there in terms of obviously him trying to fix them. It's a tough job, but whether he's going to fix them, I don't know. And you look at Man City, obviously, they didn't get Kane. I'm sure that's a huge blow for them. It makes me question now, will they be... I still think they'll be very strong and they'll challenge Chelsea. But if they got Kane, I would have had them down as favourites. But now without Kane, I don't know. I'd say he's majorly disappointed that they didn't get Kane. And I saw some of his comments just talking about Daniel Levy and basically saying Levy didn't want to talk, didn't want to negotiate. Now, I would credit Daniel Levy there in terms of it just goes to show how shrewd and hard-nosed he is when it comes to business. And that's his prerogative because obviously he's looking after the club and he wants the best for them. But Guardiola was majorly disappointed they didn't get Kane. I thought Kane was a done deal, Reggie. I'm shocked that they didn't get him. I thought once Kane said he was going to leave and obviously City said they were going to take him and wanted him, I thought that was a done deal.
Yeah.
So I suppose it just goes to show you Daniel Levy, the power and how hard-nosed he is when it comes to business.
Yeah, no question about it. Podcast going well. Who have you got this week?
Yeah, we had a break last week. We were on Champions League duty, yeah. Reggie. So we'll be back in full swing this week. And we're hoping maybe to have Keith Long if all goes well tomorrow. But if they lose, I doubt we'll have him.
Yeah, that might put a spanner in the works. But no, it's been
exactly,
good.
Exactly,
it's been going great, though. Really enjoying it. You're getting some top quality guests on it.
It's been great, yeah. It's been very good. And Shuey, obviously, a big help. Paul, who you know as well, Paul Morris, great help as well. So it's been going well, Reggie, yeah. Thanks be to God. And, we enjoy it as well. That's the main thing. It's like you on a Saturday morning. Once you enjoy it, then it's always going to go well, Reggie.
Absolutely. Okay, well, I'm not enjoying things too much with Arsenal sitting in 19th position at the moment. Just one off the absolute bottom with a game today that I know they're not going to win. And we could be sitting there in the bottom of the league next week. But there you go. That's the way it works.
That's the beauty of it, Reggie. That's the beauty of it.